Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, the wide receiver drama continues to flow. There's been no more dramatic position in all of sport than wide receivers in the NFL, going all the way, I would say going all the way back to right around the Diggs trade here. And then you had all the contract standoffs during the offseason. Mm. Some of them resolved to the satisfaction of both parties, some not. You've had trades already this year with Devontae Adams going to the Jets. You had Amari Cooper going to the Bills. And now yesterday, DeAndre Hopkins goes to the Kansas City Chiefs. Good move for D-Hop, I would say. Good move for both sides. They needed big-time help. They got a lot of injuries in that receiving core in Kansas City right now. So Hopkins, even at this stage of his career, even this version of DeAndre Hopkins, which is not, I don't know, it's anywhere close to peak DeAndre Hopkins, but he's still a plus player. Good trade. You know who it would appear, according to Snapchat, Seth, would like to join DeAndre Hopkins in Kansas City?
Who?
Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill, this is how it's being interpreted.
Okay.
Tyreek Hill posted a photo of DeAndre Hopkins in a Chiefs uniform on Snapchat with a couple of emojis. One of them a crying emoji, another one I'll need the kids to interpret for me. But he posted it. Tyreek Hill, picture of DeAndre in a Chiefs uniform. Then on the next screen, it's just a phone emoji with Tyreek Hill's picture on it. And yeah, people are seemingly interpreting those back-to-back posts as a hint for Chiefs GM Brett Veach to give Tyreek Hill a call.
Yeah, the one thing, just is the one emoji you talk about is the one hand over the eye, the other one just peeking, like just kind of peeking out of one hand.
Taking a look, you've got your going on.
Hands over your face, yeah. So it's always dicey interpreting emojis.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Tyreek Hill was also just, you know, wasn't he just talking about how we're back or we're still here or something like that?
Oh, yeah, he told
like
fantasy owners yesterday, he's like, let's effing go, man. It's we're back. Yeah, because Tua's back now. Yeah.
So the phone, I think the phone emoji, if he hadn't put the phone picture up there, then I thought you might have, like, it could have been shade thrown at the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah.
The phone is what's really screwing it up.
Do you think?
And it looks like an older iPhone, too. It looks like an 11 or a 12 or something. Maybe it's just him remembering greater days or different days.
No, it looks a lot like my iPhone right now.
No, but it's fatter. See the aspect ratio on it? It's a fatter
okay,
one.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
It'd be great if it had the button at the bottom of it. Remember those old iPhones that had the button at the bottom of it?
Man? Yeah. So it's one of those first generation after they got rid of the button at the
bottom. Okay, is that what it is?
Okay. Yeah.
The iPhone sleuth in you, the forensics?
Mm-hmm.
Could it be that Tyreek Hill is just saying to DeAndre Hopkins, like, hey, man, I used to play in Kansas City. Give me a shout. I got some good barbecue recommendations. Yeah.
Yeah, or just call me so I can tell you about what it's like having to deal with the guy that throws the uncatchable football, at least in comparison to Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
I mean, to a Tagovailoa.
That's right. Tyreek, he said it.
Tua throws a catchable ball.
Well, it needed to be said. It needed to be said.
Yeah, that's right. It needed to be said. That's right.
Yeah. Patrick is good, but boy, Tua and the accuracy. Whew, doctor. Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. Hey, what did you think of Tua being so indignant about wearing the Guardian cap on his head this week? They asked him about it. He's like, no. He was like, no, I'm not wearing it. And he said, I'm going to play this game. Like, he's like, I will. Like, he used the word death in his answer. Like,
he's Evel Knievel, basically.
Yeah.
There's nothing that's going to dissuade him from going out there and getting another concussion. Yeah.
What did you think of that? Of him being so.
Was he incredulous that he was like, why would you even ask me that? Of course not, I'm wearing
it. His tone seemed a little that way. I mean, say that, but his tone seemed a little like, he was like, hey, I appreciate everybody's concern, but I'm not wearing the Guardian cap, and this game means the world to my death, that kind of thing.
it's not, the Guardian cap doesn't, there's nothing that should affect your play. I don't know. I would prefer, if I were a Dolphins fan, I think I would want him out there wearing two Guardian caps, right?
Yes, to keep him.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is
we've seen what it looks like without him out there.
Isn't it selfish not having the Guardian cap on?
Yeah,
you're prone to concussions, man, and you play a position where you're going to get hit in the head again. Put a Guardian cap on. I don't care how stupid it looks.
Yeah. Yeah,
this is vanity.
It's that's what it is. And Ed Reed was on the Manning Cast this week, and they were bringing up the Guardian Cap, and Ed Reed's just listing all the reasons why the Guardian Cap is stupid. He's like, man, like, you hit with this part of your head, not that part of your head, and this and that. And Peyton and Eli are like, what do you think of that run up the middle there, Ed? Like, they're trying to move on.
People thought that was the Mannings trying to, you know, push some agenda or something. I think honestly, it might have been just to rescue Ed Reed from himself, because a lot of the stuff he was saying didn't make any sense.
Oh,
it was like, well, you're gonna get hit anyway. Yeah. That's like saying, like, well, okay, if you get in a car accident, then why wear a seatbelt? Because you're gonna get hit anyway. Yeah. All right, it's a safety measure. It's not 100%.
Yeah.
And if I were playing, I'm guessing I wouldn't wear it. And it would be based on vanity and stupid male pride and everything else like that. But also for as a defensive tackle, your weapon is a weapon, or your head is a weapon, even legally still. Mm-hmm. Like, when you're hitting offensive linemen and everything, you want to get up underneath their chin with your helmet and pop it back like a Pez dispenser. So it feels like the Guardian Cap would get in the way of that. But as a quarterback, I don't really see a reason not to, other than it looks stupid.
Well, especially this quarterback, you know, like, who's had, he's had three concussions in 2 years or whatever it is. So Ed Reed.
You know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, I feel like CJ should be wearing one.
A Guardian Cap?
Yeah, he's had a concussion. I say you're exempt from wearing the Guardian Cap until you get a concussion.
Until you get
a quarterback, and then you should wear one for the rest of your life.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If CJ chose to wear one, I'd be cool with it. That would be, do we have the numbers on it? Has it been proven to be effective, the Guardian Cap? Do we know?
Yeah, there's some kind of it. Okay. The league, the Mannings in their cabal put out some kind of
a there's a pamphlet. There's a pamphlet out.
They thought that it was responsible for a certain reduction in head injuries. Yeah, okay. And people in practice especially.
Okay, it's Hell Week. We got the Colts coming up on Sunday at NRG Stadium, 9 a.m. Texans countdown. That'll be me and Seth. We'll be out there at the stadium. Noon kickoff here on Sports Radio 610. Did you find some Guardian Cap stuff? You've got
lab tests have suggested that it reduces concussion risk by 15 to 35%.
15 to 35. Mm-hmm. Tua should be wearing one, man. As someone who seems to get concussions 98% of the time, he should wear one. That would only make it 63.2% of the time. The trash talk has begun between the Colts and the Texans. No more prominent Colts-Texans head-to-head possible kerfuffle here than the Pat McAfee Show. J.J. Watt was making his weekly appearance yesterday on the McAfee Show. Pat McAfee, of course, a former Colt, as we know. J.J. Watt, a Texans legend. Here's what the beginning of the trash talk sounded like.
Speaking of Indiana, we got Colts-Texans. Saddest, the last one of the year. It's already the second one. Saddest so early.
Give me a good one.
Big game this weekend.
Yeah, and potentially that's why the game went the way it did against the Dolphins, because it was kind of a trap game, because we're looking ahead to the Texans.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But Colts are able to take care of business.
Mm-hmm.
AR is undefeated in Houston.
Yeah. And on the
why do you have to look ahead to the Texans? That means they're in front of you, doesn't it? Yeah, that does.
Yeah, on the calendar, actually.
For now.
On the calendar, it was ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, on the standings also.
Well, it's been a long decade with you guys potentially being above us on the standings.
One game up.
That's right. We win this one. Hold it.
You're going to have to throw for more than 86 yards, brother.
Yeah, what's going on? Is everything okay down there? Is Slowick losing it?
It's fine. It's all fine.
DeForest might be back.
We got to tighten up the end of the game situation. That's Buckner's all. We just got to tighten up the end of the game.
Oh, DeForest Buckner's
big 99.
Oh, my God.
We're good. I can't stand the crew. mumbling in the background. Yeah. JJ was the aggressor on that trash talk. JJ was the one like, hey, man. Remember what's coming up this weekend in Houston?
He's got to really lean more into Anthony Richardson being sub 50% completion percentage.
Yes.
We might have to send him some.
You send him
some fuel for next week.
Yeah,
because it's like bringing up CJ Stroud's one bad game where he had 86 yards passing.
Yes.
It doesn't, like, that's just such an easy comeback with Anthony Richardson.
It's
one game where he completed more than 50% of his passes when he was 3 for 4.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, you're worried about CJ Stroud versus him? CJ's week last week was still better than the majority of Anthony Richardson's games in the NFL. So, yeah.
Was there a part of you in listening to that just now that you're like, God, I wish I was there? instead of I wish JJ had just given me the hot tag to go in there and handle the trash talk for him in that case.
No, because I would have lost. I would have gone over the top on it. So no, it's better for better for JJ in that moment.
Amazing. Yeah.
I'm not out there trying to get clicks, Sean.
Yes, you are. You have a YouTube channel. What are you talking about?
Those are different clicks. The YouTube channel is more like those people are less inclined to appreciate. I don't give hot zingers on there or anything.
I get what you're saying. If you have a YouTube channel and you're saying, I'm trying not to get clicks, it's like owning a restaurant. Like, I'm really not trying to sell these hamburgers over here.
I ain't whoring myself out for clicks, okay Sean? Okay, whoring myself out for clicks.
Gotcha. Yeah, you're not, the equivalent would be, you're not standing in front of your hamburger stand in like a cow outfit with one of those arrow signs spinning it around on your head and stuff like that. You're not going to do silly stuff like that. The burgers will speak for themselves, much the same way your well-grounded, solid takes on YouTube will stand for themselves.
I should. You know what? And I was being cruel to Anthony Richardson. It's true that he has yet to throw for more than 204 yards in a game.
Okay, dude. How do you not throw for more than 204 yards in a game?
I apologize. He had 212 versus the Texans. It was the season high.
Those
are the glory days for Richardson.
My point remains. How do you not throw for more than 212 yards in a game where you have a 60, a 57, and a 54-yard completion?
I know. Well, you go 9 for 19. That's how you do it. How you do it.
6 for 16 on the other 16 throws. Yeah.
Yeah. They should. My advice to any defensive coordinator going against the Texans is typically, why don't you just go ahead and blitz every play? Just do it. Just do it. And the Packers didn't even blitz all that much.
They only blitzed on third down.
They're so when they do it.
They were actually predictable in their blitzing.
I really am. Like, why aren't you in a cover zero blitz every play? Just do it. What are you, a coward? Just do it. Likewise, though, going against Anthony Richardson, I'm always kind of like, why don't you just, you guys should play like cover 10. Yeah. I don't know. Just rush one and just see what happens. He's not going to, just drop everybody. He's not going to complete enough passes to beat you.
Dude.
As long as you avoid the deep shot.
Flores is probably mad he doesn't get to play the Texans again. Because after watching that Packers game, he's like, you know what? I'm going to try it. I'm going to blitz on every single play. And see what happens.
Flores is interesting because he actually, they're, I don't want to get too nerdy about this. Like, they play a boatload of cover zero. That's where you got no safety help at all. Kind of risky. They've got, like, the second highest cover zero rate in the league. But then when it comes to just playing single high safety stuff, they're actually really low. They play a lot of zone, and a lot of their blitz looks are zone blitzes where they're not actually blitzing, they're just dropping guys off into coverage. So they're like super conservative in a lot of ways, except that when they go for it, they go for it.
Yeah.
Which is, I admire it because it's kind of like my diet strategy.
Yeah.
I kind of like, I'm pretty good. And I go cover zero blitz on a box of donuts.
Yeah.
And that's what, like, and I appreciate that. I think it's a good way to go through life.
Game day in the press box, Texans, cover zero blitz.
I go cover zero on those ice cream sandwiches.
You
that's right.
You do. It's glorious. Here's D'Amico Ryans yesterday. How much of the Colts changed since you saw them in week one?
You look back at week one, but it seems so far away for me, so far removed, especially being the first game of the season. Everybody is trying to figure themselves out that first game, and you kind of throw that game out of the window, and you see, you know, kind of where the trends, where are they moving these last four games, right? Especially the games with Anthony Richardson and what they've been able to do. Like, you see their style of play and who they want to be. Of course, I know, first and foremost, they want to run the football, right? Getting Taylor back, he's an exceptional player. Playmaker. He has the stop-start ability. He has the home run speed, contact balance. Like, they have to rely on the run game, and they have really good guys who can run it with JT and with Anthony Richardson. So that's where it'll start. And then, you know, with the explosive passes, we know we gave up some explosive passes there in our first game. So we have to be just disciplined in our coverage and play the defense the proper way. And we try to eliminate those explosives. But, you know, we'll kind of see how they try to attack us. You know, they're getting some guys back. They get Buckner back defensively. That's going to help them, you know, with their run game and their pass rush. He's a great player as well. So things change over weekly. You know, things change. So we'll see. We'll be ready for whatever they throw at us.
So the thing that doesn't change, as long as Anthony Richardson is in there especially, is that there's a lot of pressure on your linebackers and your safeties to not bite on the play action. So the there's you know, more pressure on the linebackers yet again because of their injuries and because of the offense they're facing to be really, really clean. And, you know, you've got to account for Jonathan Taylor. You've got to account for Anthony Richardson's legs, the RPOs, all of that. And that's some of what's done the Texans in this year so far on defense is the discipline and just not letting Alec Pierce or whomever else get behind you.
Yep.
As a secondary, as a linebacking unit, everybody else that's in coverage, you've just got to be mentally sharp this week because Anthony Richardson, as long as he completes 50% of his passes, that's good enough for them on any given Sunday, apparently. Ooh. They've just still got the threat of his legs and the RPO and everything else.
Yeah, he had good rushing numbers against the Texans the first time around, but most of it came on scrambles. You know, the most of it came when the pocket was breaking down. It's interesting because he ran the ball. He had 14 rushing attempts against Miami. Like, they were clearly doing a lot and for 56 yards. So that's, like, a lot more design stuff. And I wonder if, bless you, I wonder if
a rough one with a broken rib.
I wonder if Shane Steichen is reaching the point with Anthony Richardson now. Like, it's very evident. Like, he's just whatever work he put in throwing the football this offseason just isn't taking yet in terms of him becoming a more polished passer. Yeah. And I wonder if they're at the point with Anthony Richardson where, like, the time is running out is what Bobby Slowick said about the Texans run game. And I think the feeling of a lot of Texan fans is that when Bobby Slowick said that about the Texans conventional run game a few weeks ago, it's like, okay, good. So if it's still not working a couple weeks from now, we're going to see CJ cooking a little bit more. Like, whatever we're doing, time's running out. We're going to see CJ cook. It feels like Shane Steichen might be at that point with Anthony Richardson. Like, okay, we tried this thing where we're trying to let him throw and get the passing game involved a little bit more. The fact of the matter is, this guy is like a 6'5 freak that's built in a lab that just can't throw the football accurately. Like, we can try to pigeonhole him. He ain't going to. Jalen Hurts became a better thrower of the football under Shane Steichen. That is not happening with Anthony Richardson right now.
I think that, and some of that too, is if you want him to go the Josh Allen transformation, a lot of that was mechanics. Some of it was getting Stephon Diggs, but he just changed who he was as a thrower. And I think with Anthony Richardson, it's clear now that, like, some of the stuff that in the highlight reels, it looks awesome. Like, ooh, look at that. He's throwing from different arm angles and everything. He's got to have some of that, like, just basically beat out of him, but you can't really fix it until the offseason. And last year, he was doing it while rehabbing a shoulder injury.
That's right.
I guess if I were a Colts fan, to add to the list of multiple things I'm depressed about, having, you know, living in Indianapolis and all, is that I don't know when that healthy offseason is going to be for Anthony Richardson. He gets hurt every year since high school.
Yep.
Like, that's who he is. So I don't know when the healthy offseason where he's going to be able to really work on the finer aspects of throwing the football is going to come because he just keeps getting injured.
Yeah, and he's already been hurt one time this year, and we're not even in week 8 yet. So it's a good point. Bouncing back from the Green Bay loss, DeMeco was asked about that yesterday. The big question people want to know, are the issues fixed with the Texans' pass protection?
Yeah, great question there. I mean, the communication can definitely pick up, and I think our issues have really shown up on the road when it's loud and, you know, it's tough to communicate. That's where some of the issues come out, but I think all of it is fixable, and that's the encouraging part about it. All of it is fixable. Our guys have picked up these stunts and different things that we've seen. Our guys have picked it up before, so I'm encouraged. Right, to see how our guys respond this week. You know, we'll see similar things. Right, whenever one team does something on tape, you know you have to get ready and prepare for the next week because teams will see, like, have you put the fire out? So it's a great opportunity to see us go put the fire out this week. It's a tough challenge versus this defensive line. They do a great job of executing their stunts really well. So we know, you know, we'll have our hands full again this week.
The offensive line, what they said, Titus Howard said, DeMeco had said at one point on Monday, just that there were good plays in that game last week, you know, and there have been stretches of good play within specific games. It's a matter of doing it more consistently. I think that there is definitely, there's a need to go back to basics in some regards. And sometimes it's hard in the middle of an NFL season where you're game planning for upcoming opponents and everything. But, man, sometimes it's a matter of just more walkthroughs, less film work, less high-level stuff, and just really hammering down what people's responsibilities are in given situations. Because The toughest thing is, I know that they're not, I know that those aren't stupid guys. I know that Tytus Howard and Laremy Tunsil aren't dumb guys. There's times where they're not on the same page as the running backs or the guards next to them. The younger players, I think at times, they're not dumb, but they're young and inexperienced. Mm-hmm. They're having a hard time sorting out some relatively basic stuff. Mm-hmm. And some of that is just really hammering the basic math of the stuff. That it's, all right, you got three guys over here, you got three guys over here, and three defenders that we need to block.
Yeah.
And how do we handle it when those things change at the snap?
Yeah.
Because right now they're having a hard time sorting all that out.
Very much so. I think my biggest concern, I understand what D'Amico's saying, like, hey, we've done it before, and they have. Like, CJ has had very good games where he's been protected well with largely this same group in front of him over the last year and a half. My concern this season, and particularly from the Packers game, is that the bad plays have been so bad that they're going to get CJ hurt. You know, the free runners are ridiculous.
There's old school quarterback hit type stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff you don't see as much anymore. Like, guy completely unblocked, coming off the edge.
Yeah, and a lot.
Sean, that's been the most frustrating thing for me when it comes to the miscommunications. So this is, I just, multiple times in the last few weeks, you have an offensive tackle and the running back blocking an off-ball linebacker. Well, the best pass rusher on the team, a defensive end, is completely unblocked.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
Well...
Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
And it starts with a miscommunication and the game planning of how they're going to handle specific looks.
Yeah.
It's going to change, you know, so that it's not always the standard pass protection rules, but they're not on the same page.
Right.
And you've got two pass blockers committed to a guy who's not even blitzing, and meanwhile the defensive end is scot-free to the quarterback. Those are the ones that every now and then a corner blitz is going to hit.
Sure.
Every now and then a late developing blitz or a linebacker that blitzes late
gets on
a play where you've got a bunch of deep routes, it's going to hit.
Yep.
It's the stuff where guys are completely unblocked and not by design that it's really frustrating.
Yeah,
those all start with miscommunication.
It's a sprint to see how fast the guy can get to CJ. Like, it's he's just a beeline right for the quarterback. And I guess my concern, again, it's literally like one half of one game, but I feel like for the first time in that Green Bay game, like, we saw like a jittery CJ Stroud. Like, we saw CJ, like, even when the pocket was moderately well blocked, like, he was off. He was inaccurate. Yeah. He was jumpy. And maybe I'm overreading into it, and I think, do I think CJ's been ruined by one game against the Packers? No, of course not. But you start to stack a few games like this on top of each other, and you know, a guy who all of a sudden was considered one of the top three or five quarterbacks in the league is dealing with, seeing ghosts may be an overreach here. Like, he ain't Sam Darnold with the Jets or anything like that. But I want the guy to be the best quarterback in the league. He's got that sort of potential over the next few years, and I don't want it to get ruined by something that's really not entirely his fault, you know?
Mina Kimes had a clip the other day where she was saying that she worries that CJ, it reminds her a little too much of Justin Herbert, which immediately angered Chargers fans and Texans fans who didn't watch the video. Because basically, it was an endorsement of both quarterbacks as good quarterbacks, and yet that have been hampered by the circumstances around them. And yeah, I think it's a valid comparison. Depending on how you put the title or the headline, I think that CJ right now is being limited by his supporting cast.
Yes.
And you're getting, he's not able to be the best version of CJ Stroud.
We've got that Mina Kimes. Do you want it?
Oh, okay.
We'll play it right here. Yeah.
Give it to me.
Yep, here it is.
Here is my fear with CJ Stroud. He is beginning to be the new Justin Herbert for me, where every week on tape, I'm like, this dude is putting out some of the best throws I've seen of any quarterback, and yet everything around him is crumbling. He's constantly in third and long. They're constantly running the ball with no success and early downs. I am starting to really worry because we're about halfway into the season. This should be a Super Bowl team, but Alex, it feels like the infrastructure around him is not good enough right now.
I think she captured the concerns of Texan fans perfectly in that clip, right? She just captured what I just said, to your point. Yeah.
Right. It was the way that the original tweet was headlined that made people think that she was bashing CJ Stroud or something.
Yeah.
I said, hey, listen, we are not a watch the video before responding people.
Not this show.
Texans fans, okay?
Not this show.
I think that there's all offseason I would go on different podcasts or shows in other markets, and basically even the dudes that are hardcore film watchers would be saying things like, I just don't see what the problem could be on this offense or what the weakness could be. And I'd have to be like, listen, guys, I appreciate the love, but this team couldn't run the football last year, and until they prove that they can, if for what Bobby Slowick wants to do with this offense, they've got some unanswered questions on the offensive line and throughout. And so far, we've seen a lot of those fears and questions really come up. I mean, this is where I get frustrated sometimes, where people will point out Laremy Tunsil's Pro Football Focus pass blocking grades and act like the run game doesn't exist at all.
Right.
Because if, like we said it yesterday, if you're going to play the Pro Football Focus game, Pro Football Focus has Laremy Tunsil graded as a mediocre NFL offensive
overall
tackle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Partly because of the penalties, partly because he's just got so many comically bad snaps in the run game.
Correct.
And there's just times where he just looks like a boy amongst men sometimes as a run blocker.
Yep.
So there's more to the story than this, and they have not been able to figure out a way to get the run game genuinely going, and Bobby wants to have a fully developed offense where the run game and the pass game complement each other. You got to figure out something, or you got to just turn it more into a let CJ cook type of deal, because it's just and it's filtering over into the pass protection. They've got issues. And it all comes back to Bobby Slowick at this point. Like, man, what are you doing with this assemblage of talent not producing more than you are?
Is this the most you've been looking forward to a Bobby Slowick press conference today?
No. I hate it. Well, I don't like conflict. I don't like a discomfort.
Well, you're in the wrong business, pal. Because that's what this business is about. You pull yourself up by your bootstraps and get some conflict going, all right?
As people have long said, that's Seth Payne. He's afraid of conflict. That's what they always say.
Right.
He's afraid of confrontation.
Hey, go Google Seth Payne conflict and see what comes up.
Don't die, everybody.
Hey, we got one more from D'Amico Ryan. So we're talking about C.J. Stroud. He's not worried about C.J. Stroud bouncing back.
C.J. handles adversity really well because he's really grounded, right? He's grounded in the word first and foremost, and that helps him to be able to weather, you know, the adversity when tough things come his way. Is, you know, losing a game or having a tough game is the only adversity he's faced in life. And if it doesn't dictate who he is or change, you know, his personality and what he's about. So, you know, I'm excited to see how not only CJ, but how everyone responds, you know, after losing a game. Is it adversity? No, we lost the game. There's a lot more adversity in life that a lot of people deal with. We lost the game. It happens. Like, let's move on. Let's see how we play this week.
Right, there you go, man.
Yeah, I don't worry about CJ kind of losing his cool or anything like that.
I think
he and Bobby Slowick do have a good relationship when it comes to, even if they're not seeing eye to eye, they know how to talk to each other and work things out. I guess I could start worrying a little bit about the Stephon Diggs dynamic.
I think it's something to monitor for sure.
Yeah, I mean, so far he's been awesome in terms of saying the right things and everything, focusing his rage towards the opponent or Jair Alexander and all of that. Like, I feel like that's been good. It's something to monitor.
He might be, Diggs might be becoming a little more affordable for the Texans to keep if they want to keep him next season. Five-catch, 23-yard games while winning, you know?
I put that in the bucket of, like, hey, we're not going to lose Bobby Slowick to a head coaching job. Great. Okay.
Fair. You're right. It is kind of in that same category. I think Diggs is more of a victim right now than you know what I mean? Than Diggs is losing it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think...
Yeah.
You know, it's a fair point. Boy, he's been so bad, he'll be affordable next
year.
He'll
be right. He's been so non-productive, we'll be able to get a lot more out of him.
That's where
you're like, all right, it's Xavier Hutchinson time, baby.
and I don't think that yet. Like, I think Diggs still has plenty left in the tank.
He was, he was second in the NFL in receptions until last week, I believe.
You're right about that. He was.
You know what it is, Sean? It's not that I fear conflict. I don't like... it's like I can't get into cringe comedy.
You don't like that, do you?
I discovered this yesterday too. We're working our way through Only Murders in the Building on Hulu, and there's in season two, Steve Martin and Selena Gomez and Martin Short, the main characters, they get framed. Oh, and I can't. man, the idea of getting framed for something, it's really hard for me. I almost can't even watch the show. It's so like that's the, like, my Halloween horror show.
Yeah. And you feel helpless, like there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. Too much empathy. That's what they always say about
me.
This is Seth. He's got too much empathy.
Yep. Go Google Seth Payne and empathy and see what comes up. I don't know. You probably actually do have some good stuff there.
I don't know.
I think you're pretty empathetic. We'll see.
So like things orbiting that you're really worried about right now. We're monitoring Stephon Diggs, and if the Texans offense goes through a dry spell,
what does our Texans dashboard look like right now? Like, you know,
I think he's committed to.
I realize this fluid level's a little low, but it's not urgent yet.
Right. There's not a red check engine warning on it or anything yet.
Yeah.
The Texans offensive line right now.
Oh, yeah, that's a flashing red light right now.
There's a little smoke coming out of the radiator.
Yeah, that's like I'm getting my AAA card out. Yeah.
You realize I've been putting, I gotta maybe change my antifreeze or something.
Right.
Like, I gotta swap Kenyon Green out for a higher grade antifreeze.
I've been putting diesel in my unleaded gas tank.
You know?
I thought it would make me go faster. Diesel's such a cool word. Yeah.
It's such a cool word.
So the offensive line.
It's true. You're like, ooh, diesel.
Not that I've done that before. Okay. What about on defense? What's our big concern over there on the defensive side?
My biggest concern is when they get to the playoffs. Or versus the better teams, can the run defense really hold up?
Yeah.
You know, just like on offense, can you run the ball when you need to run? On defense, I worry about, all right, if you go up against a really well-balanced offense and they get a lead, are you going to be able to really come up and stop the run? And that's a tough one because they're very good at the bend but don't break game. They'll come up and so they'll allow chunk yardage, but then they come up and get a tackle for a loss or a sack and kill a drive. It just never feels. It never feels the way you want it to feel.
No.
You know, it doesn't feel like they can just line up and stop the run with their front seven and without having to blitz and everything. So that's the thing to monitor right now. But it's not red alert.
Has that group overachieved or have they exceeded your expectations? The interior, not the whole D line.
Yeah.
The interior guys.
I think yes, in that it look like the defensive tackles, they haven't been awesome in terms of soaking up double teams and doing all that conventional stuff, but they have come up big in big moments. Like on the goal line a couple weeks ago against the Bills, they came up huge. The defensive tackles came up huge in that goal line stand. So I think given who they are, what types of players they are and everything, that I'm good with that for now. It's the classic swarm mentality. You just got to figure out a way to get it done, and I think they've got enough guys that are capable of doing that.
Yeah.
It's not going to be the strength of their team or anything. They're run stuffing defensive tackles, but for the way they're playing right now, it's good enough.
I would guess that for most fans that group has overachieved expectations only because there were a lot of people, despite the great offseason that the Texans had in the pickups they made, I think there were a lot of people that were a little incredulous over the Malik Collins trade for a 7th-round pick. I know there was a lot. I know there's an Eric Armstead issue in there as well that made it a little more complicated. Letting Sheldon Rankins walk, I think, concerned some people. You replace them with some, to fans, no-namers. But Tim Settle has been, I think, pretty good for this team. Mario Edwards, when he's not suspended for 4 games, has been better than people expected for this team, you know?
The weird thing about I was confused. I was honestly confused about like the uproar over losing Sheldon Rankins and Malik Collins, given that nobody was super enthused about them when they were here, and they were both guys that were a lot like the guys they brought in.
Yeah.
They're guys that didn't get great offers elsewhere when the Texans brought them in and ended up playing above and beyond where they had the previous year or two. Yeah. And I think that you're seeing that Mario Edwards was steadily getting better in the system as he got to know the system. And I think they swapped out kind of a blue collar player for a blue collar player at both the defensive tackle positions.
Yep.
I did miss Malik Collins this weekend when he throat punched Pat Mahomes for no reason at all after a play. I don't think he got flagged for it either. I think he got away with it. Because remember Malik Collins would have, he'd have like seven unsportsmanlikes and none of them made any sense.
No.
It was like when he hit a quarterback when clearly you're going to get flagged if you hit the quarterback. I like that he's just got a natural hatred for quarterbacks. Now, it's frustrating when he's the one getting penalized, but I miss that.
There's a certain someone that is part of one of these two teams that in the World Series that starts tomorrow that has me rethinking my anybody but the Dodgers stance that I have on the World Series. And we'll let you hear why next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
I have Payne and Pendergast with you. The World Series starts tomorrow, Yankees and Dodgers. We call that Satan's Playground, this World Series.
It's awesome, Sean, because nobody will stop. You know who is front and center in all of this?
The Houston ESPN, Astros. That's who.
And Houston Astros. They can't stop talking about the Houston Astros. Brian Cashman can't stop talking about the Houston Astros.
You knew exactly what the tease was here, my friend, because my tease was, do you guys know, once it got down to Yankees, Guardians, Mets, Dodgers, and the two LCSs, my overall stance was anybody but the Dodgers, including the Yankees. I just don't. There is a different type of distaste I have for the Dodgers, or at least I did until yesterday, for the Dodgers over the Yankees.
Yeah,
I think the Dodger fans are more obnoxious than the Yankee fans. I think they're bigger babies than the Yankee fans. I think the Yankee fans are more the devil we know a little bit, being in the American League with them, you know, facing them so frequently during the regular season, during the postseason four times in the last decade. Whereas the Dodgers, we've only seen once. The only sniff we get at Dodger fans now is them complaining about the sign stealing in 2017, and they still do it to this day. I thought it had died down with the Yankees. You know, I thought them booing Altuve as much as they do, that they may have kind of learned their lesson. So the Yankee fans, they were the lesser of two evils until yesterday when this bit of audio popped up. Brian Cashman, the GM of the Yankees, on with Mad Dog Russo on MLB TV. And here was Mad Dog Russo just innocently asking him, how good does it feel to end this hiatus, this drought that you've had from being in the World Series for the last decade and a half?
How about winning a pennant? How does that mean to you? Let me hear.
It means a lot. And I hate the 15-year thing because it doesn't, it completely forgets and discounts that that some other organization cheated us when we were all the way in the end. You know, if you knew what was going on, I don't think they would be advancing at that during that time thing. I think we would have been advancing. So I hate that 15-year thing because I don't think it accurately reflects history.
You whiny little rat-faced worm.
The funniest thing about it, though, too, is that I don't think Yankees fans want to hear it either.
Right.
I mean, the whole, and because, you know, it's not like he's going to take the time to point out that it wasn't happening in 2019. You know, he just tries to conveniently lump all of that stuff in. Or that the Yankees and the Dodgers were also electronically sign-stealing. The biggest thing the Astros did was they ignored the memo in 2017. When there was a hazy area when it wasn't technically illegal, it wasn't in the rule book. Yeah. The Astros continued on for a month or so longer than other teams supposedly did.
Right.
But the only reason any of this ever came to the forefront was because that was what was going on with a lot of baseball teams in 2017. The Astros continued to be so good offensively. Their bats remained so good that pitchers like Mike Fiers and others around the league assumed that the Astros must still be doing all that stuff. It couldn't possibly be that they were just that good, when in fact, that's what it turned out being. So Cashman is trying to get away from it. I could listen to him about, okay, if you want to talk about 2017, maybe he's going to be inaccurate about a few things, but him trying to lump in 2019, that's a move of a coward and a scoundrel.
Yes.
Like a guy that's been stealing money from the Yankees for years by spending as much as possible and continually disappointing in the playoffs. That is a cowardly, scoundrel-like move.
Yes, there should be honor among thieves, and everybody was a thief back in 2017. Yeah. There should be honor among thieves, and just because the Astros were the one that had a rat in the clubhouse,
mm-hmm,
that doesn't make the other mob bosses that didn't get ratted out any more honorable in all this. You just didn't have a worm like Mike Fiers in your clubhouse ready to squeal the first sign of the feds showing up on his front door.
It's a little bit, and it's nice and convenient for everybody because everybody else can just kind of move on and like various. It's the way that Lance Armstrong is treated, yeah. And you know, like, oh, all of a sudden, oh, it's easy to just point to him and like, don't let's not look at the fact that they were all doping.
Yeah.
These are like, this American is doping better than I. We are. We cannot stand for this. This injustice.
Right.
Bunch of dirty Frenchmen. That's what you are, baseball fans. Well, all of you except Astros fans.
Except Astros fans. That's the thing about Fires, too. It's not even like he got cornered by the feds and they were going to send him to prison or his kid was getting pinched for selling heroin, so he had to, you know, give the feds something to keep his kid out of prison, like what happened to... Well, I'm not going to spoil anything for anybody. He went up to the federal building, basically, and went knocking on the door. I was like, we've been racketeering, and we've been selling heroin on those garbage routes. Are you there? Are you? It's like 6 in the morning. You can't wait to get it off his chest. Oh, such a rat. Fires. So I have not completely flipped on my World Series hope of anybody but the Dodgers, but boy, Cashman is pushing the issue right now. Who are you rooting for? Anybody in this Yankees?
No, Dodgers? I can't. I can't bring myself to. Yeah. Lopez made a good case for Ohtani and the Dodgers and what have you, but I just sometimes it's okay to just keep hating your heart.
Yeah,
you know, just this is sports hatred. It's not meant to be. It's not meant to be just given up and abandoned.
Lopez is acting like he's still a columnist at the Chronicle. Like he needs a good story out of this with Shohei winning a championship. John, those days are over. You're on talk radio. This is a world with much more hatred and less honorability than you writing your flowery columns back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Get some hate in your heart, man. I was rooting for Shohei to get pinched for gambling. That would have been better for sports talk radio, for sure.
Yeah,
100%. And him winning a World Series? Oh, you're telling me the guy who's the highest paid guy in the history of the sport, who went 50-50 this year, won a championship?
Like, it's tough. The Shohei Ohtani stuff, too, it's annoying because it's not as juicy. Even if it were Shohei Ohtani gambling, it doesn't actually affect whether or not the Dodgers are good or not.
Yeah.
If anything, it could make him a little bit worse if a guy had a serious gambling issue. So, but no, Shohei Ohtani, it turns out he's too innocent and trusting. That was his crime.
Hey, we talked earlier, we played the Manfred audio earlier about he's saying that within the next 4 years, he predicts there will be some version of an automated strike zone in baseball, and how good the technology is now that it's down to like a fraction of a fraction of an inch.
1/100th of an inch.
Yeah. So it's really good technology, according to Manfred at least. Text message. Human error is a part of sports since sports has been sports. Wanting machines involved in human sports under the guise of, quote, getting the call right is a simpleton's thought.
A simpleton's thought.
Yeah.
Okay, so he doesn't want technology in sports anywhere?
It would appear.
So he doesn't like having a clock?
Let me read the part.
Is there no instant replay allowed either?
Like, maybe so. Wanting machines involved in a human... So I'm just reading. This is all he said, Seth. I don't know the answers to these questions. Wanting machines involved in human sports under the guise of getting it right is a simpleton's thought. So I would say this probably is somebody who's anti-instant replay.
Anti-instant replay.
Yeah.
And somehow it's a simpleton's thought to take advantage of modern technology. I would assume this is an Amish person texting.
Why?
Like he stole, like whoever drives him to work in the morning, let him use his smartphone or something.
The horse and buggy that drives
him. Because adopting new technology is the work of simpletons and probably devil worship. Worshippers, apparently.
I will say this specifically about this issue with the automated strike zone, because I am somebody who skews more towards not wanting as much replay in sports as wanting.
Yeah.
I think sometimes in these calls in football where we are getting down to the fraction of the knee hitting the ground as the ball is coming, like, man, I think there needs to, I don't even call it human error, just the human element of slowing it down frame by frame. Like, there's part of it like, no, man, the dude coughed up the football. So we're rewarding him because his knee hit a fraction of a second before. So I am somebody who, I think there should be some replay, for sure. But I'm somebody who skews, especially on the judgment calls, towards not having replay. This is a process in baseball that can be super automated. There's a pitch on every single play. It's very repetitious.
Uh-huh.
And the technology, you made a great point before. Like, anybody who's waiting for the technology to be perfect with this, like, well, until it gets to be no fractions of an inch, let me know then, and then we'll incorporate this. No, a fraction of an inch is a thousand times better than these fatzos behind the plate right now that are calling balls and strikes.
No, and it always, and I think baseball has actually been really careful about all of this, is that they just, they want it to be where they don't want to adopt it until it is seamless or relatively seamless, because there's always a point, there's like an inflection point where the technology becomes too good to ignore, and it's just so much better. So to say that you don't want any replay at all, like when it's just so clearly obvious sometimes that you can undo really, really bad calls, I could never go back to that. I would agree that, yeah, sometimes it becomes too intrusive or you're splitting hairs too much. But you also now, because you have HD television, it's harder to ignore. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just really, it's really, really hard to ignore. So you got to find the right balance there. But to say that you don't like technology and you're a simpleton if you like technology, then I need you to show up in your horse and buggy and show me exactly all the places that you've refused to adopt technology when it's clearly better.
Dude's rolling down his window manually.
Guy's accountant is doing his taxes with an abacus, which is still technology, still technology.
Right, he's not counting in his head or with his fingers, right?
Yeah, he's throwing sewing machines into the river because the seamstresses are out of work.
Especially the electric ones.
Get that Luddite off my damn text machine.
There you go.
I'm a damn simpleton. I'm a simpleton and I want things simpleton. No Luddites.
All right. we played this audio a little earlier. I want to play it again because we're getting some Texan fans on the text page agreeing with what we said earlier. If there's a concern about C.J. Stroud right now that came out of the Green Bay game, maybe it's this. There is a national person who's got the same concern. There is a quarterback who responded to this on the same podcast. Is this quarterback, who has faced some adversity himself in the days, is he worried about C.J. Stroud? We will get to that coming up next.